All right, what do we mean by home brewing? Essentially, it means building your own equipment, but there's different levels of this. And one of them is like what Mike does. You design and build stuff, build it yourself. I wanted to be a double E engineer the worst way. And like I said, I got my license young. I knew I loved electronics, and I was going to go to college and be a double E. And my high school counselor told me I wasn't smart enough. Seriously. And when I went to a little school up in northern Ohio, and you had to decide fairly early on whether you're going to fix farm equipment or go to college. And I was encouraged to fix farm equipment. And so I didn't go into it, and I kind of regret it even to this day. I really admire people like Mike and others who can build stuff. There are guys who, really, you send them out for a month in the forest, and they come back with a kilowatt transceiver that runs on creek water. I don't know how they do it, but they can do it. Pete Giuliano is one of those guys. Maybe you've heard of him. This is his version of home brewing. And he has each one of those little pads or little islands that you see there is some kind of a circuit. It might be an audio amp. It might be the power supply. It might be an oscillator, whatever. But that's the way he builds, and he has the knowledge to do that. I don't have that knowledge, unfortunately. For those people who know what they can do, then it just boils down to what do I want to build. Once you've made that decision, for someone like me, you have to go out and decide what's feasible given my talents and my resources. Create the design, block diagrams, and so forth. Acquire the parts, breadboard the design, help with the problems. Forms are a great resource for that. Anyone who's got a MicroBitX knows how valuable those forms can be. Printed circuit board, like Mike said, I got to find that $2 one. I found a $5 one. And then share with open source. Almost everything I've done, at least up until now, is open source. I can't design and build, but you can buy a kit and put it together. And some people call that homebrewing. I don't think it really is. But usually you get a bag of parts and some bad instructions. This is the 49er kit that you can buy on eBay for like 10 bucks. And it's a 3-watt, 40-meter transceiver. That's a simple thing. Build a kit, read the instructions, build a kit, and you end up with what it is. Then the third category is what I call a tweener. And that's somebody else's design, but you somehow enhance it. And maybe you saw this. This was in QST. That's the same 49er, but I added a VFO to it and a 2-line LCD display. And the reason for doing that was because at a field day that we had for the club I belong to, we had a go-to station where somebody could come in and get on the air, go to. And he was about 13 years old, and he was so excited. He talked to somebody in California, and he was just beside himself. And he was telling his mother about it when I walked up. And her response was, yeah, that sounds like a wonderful hobby, but where are you going to get the thousands of dollars it costs for the radio? And we have that perception. A lot of people think that we have to have several thousand dollars tied up in equipment to be able to contact someone else. So that's why this was built. The next year, I took it to field day, and I said, build this for under $50, this station. Another variation. This is the MicroBitX display. How many have heard of the MicroBitX? Okay, good. Al and I have been working on a tweener variation on that, and that's our display, our touchscreen display, 5 or 7 inch. We've got, as you can see, reading on the top, we've got a AGC built in. We've got a S meter. We've got 8 filters in it. We've got a speech compressor, 2 BFOs. Oh, and see those... down in the lower right, you see S1, 2, 3. Those are for push buttons on the top of the rig. So if you press S1, the message you see at the bottom of the screen is what gets sent out in Morse code. And you get 50 of those. And you can set those at runtime. You don't have to recompile just to change them. That's what those up and down arrows are for over on the side. So this is really taking someone else's work and just expanding on it, and maybe doing a little bit more. Here's another addition. After I did the 49er, a lot of people were having problems with local AM stations. And so I built a little circuit board that was just a broadcast interference filter. That one cost 87 cents. And it just knocked the slats out of the BCI. Chuck Adams. That uses his Muppet construction. More on that in a little bit. Okay, why homebrew? Well, at first you didn't have a choice. When I got my license, you either had enough money to buy a Collins S line, or you're pretty much limited to building your own. So my first transmitter was a 15-watt two-tube affair with a Helicrafters S40 for the receiver, and that was it. So you just didn't have. Today, you don't have that same restriction because there's just all kinds of opportunities and alternatives. I do it to learn, experiment, and enjoy. I get more enjoyment out of building stuff than I probably do from operating. Expand your equipment base. You can do that without too much cost. Some people do it to save money. Didn't work for this guy. I'm not sure. That might be Mike. What tools do you need? Something to melt solder. Duh. Too hot, poor control. These, there's an outfit right up in Springfield that sells hi-fi equipment. Parts Express. They had this thing on sale recently for $15. It's the one that I've been using forever. But I've gotten into SMD stuff, so I upgraded, and I now have an air reflow type machine. I've only used it once so far, but I know I'm going to be using it a lot more. So if you're just getting started, obviously go low end, decide later what you really need. Solder, I prefer 62-36-2. That last two is the silver. And Radio Shack has this in a 0.022 diameter. And I really like it. The only thing is it's really getting tough to find. I bought 7 rolls from a guy who had some. Lots of times you'll see people have sales on solder that's 0.33 and above. I wouldn't even consider using that. Sometimes you have to remove solder. You can use a solder sucker or never make a mistake. Digital multimeter. I like this ADEC. There's choices. Harbor Freight gives them away about every other month. This is probably the best $20 I've ever spent. That is a component tester, but it will test not only resistors and capacitors, it will test inductors, transistors, FETs, almost any discrete component you can think of. I don't know about you, but when I build things, if it's through hole and they have a kick capacitor has the number on it, okay, that's the same guy that wrote the Lord's Prayer on a grain of rice. Okay. Here, the advantage of these testers is you put it in, you see immediately whether it's good and if it's the correct value. I've had, not a lot, but I've had some parts that were mislabeled, and this catches it. So to me, I think this is just an invaluable thing to have if you're doing any kind of kit building. Yes? It's on eBay. They've jumped the price up. It's now $25, but it's still a bargain. They're really, and there's a cord that comes out of it that plugs into a USB port and recharges the battery. So it's got a rechargeable cell in it, too. Anyway, worth having. I use this more often than I should. Magnifying glass, and this one has LEDs built into it. I find it very useful. Not so much for the work I'm doing on my desk, but when I drop something. Okay, and it goes underneath my desk. Printed circuit board holder, I used to laugh at this and say, come on. I don't laugh anymore. I find it very, very useful. Up until last year at the Hamvention, I never had a pair of snips like this. I always use toenail clippers. These are great. These are a lot better than toenail clippers. Worth getting. What can I do to increase the odds of success? Well, what directions? Come on. Organize the parts before you start. I put this picture in QST and I got about 5 or 6 nasty grams from people saying, "Will you put something in styrofoam?" Yeah, I do, when it's a non-static sensitive component. Plus, I do all my building in the basement. I could rub 2 cats together and not get a spark. So I'm not worried about it. Source for parts. Local, I always try to support my local suppliers if I can. I live in Cincinnati. We have an outfit called Debco. They advertise in QSD. I always check there first just to support them. DigiKey, Mouser, all the ones that you're familiar with, do a good job. And I think they really do try to help us. The shipping is a problem sometimes, but I found that it's useful to talk to other people in your club and combine orders, save on the shipping. There's an outfit in Atlanta, Georgia that advertises on eBay, and it's Friendly. And they have resistor assortments and capacitor assortments. And I've always gotten good stuff from them. It's inexpensive, but the really nice thing is they label everything. It's not just a big bag of stuff that arrives. That, to me, is worth something. Teda Electronics, I think, is a good source. I can't vouch for everything that they sell because I've had some people tell me that some of their ICs are fake, but I've not experienced that. The thing that I like about them is they have a distribution warehouse in Livingston, Colorado. So quite often, if you order, you'll get your order within three days or so. eBay, no big surprise there. Hamfest, obvious. Craigslist, I use Craigslist carefully. And I have gotten some good purchases. Recently, just bought a buddy pole for about half of what its retail price is, and it looks like it's never been out of the bag. He said he used it once, but I'm not even sure of that. Wire, if you take some scrap Ethernet cable and pull off the insulation, you've got 8 wires, high-quality wire inside, but it's all crinkled up. Take a 2x4 and roll it on the desk, and you'll take the kinks out of it, and you'll end up with some great hookup wire for next to nothing. Project cases. Big box stores have some. Harbor Freight has Apache cases that are very much like Pelican cases, and they're at a fraction of the cost, and they go on sale quite often. Plus, you get 20% off anyway. So that's a good, a great source for containers. The container store, like that 49er I showed you was in a clear Lexite or Lexan case. I kind of like that, and I did that so that if that lady came back with her son, they could see how simple it was. Organize. Mike mentioned this. Those resistors are the ones that come from Georgia, and I put them in those $4 organizing boxes. I have those at home. It makes it easy to get at things. Don't be afraid to try a strange enclosure. I had an article in QST in November with an antenna analyzer, and I used a clear waterproof case. Why not? Those were a lot cheaper than an aluminum case and a lot easier to work with. Some tips and techniques. Sometimes the part sequence matters, and it's because you want to look at the schematic and see if this heat sink is going to block you from easily mounting something else. And most manuals, like Hans's manual, is just a thing of art, really. And he's given consideration to that. But usually you can tell by looking at the schematic in the printed circuit board what sequence makes sense. Look for part similarities. Resistors and axial inductors look alike, but they don't behave the same. Study the schematic in the block diagrams and do that before you start construction, and print them out. Have a large, clean, well-lit work surface. Mike doesn't know this, but I snuck in and took a picture of his desk. And by the way, right here is a 12K resistor. You should be able to leave and return to your work without it being disturbed. In other words, you don't want to do it on the dining room table. Try to find a place where you can leave it because you're not going to do anything serious in one sitting. Try to work in a static-free environment. Like I said, my basement, not an issue. If you do have a static environment, make sure you ground yourself before you handle any ICs or static-sensitive devices. I place a large white towel on the work surface. Why? Find the parts, they don't bounce, and when you're done, you ever notice how you get little blobs, invisible blobs of solder or little balls of solder? You just take it, you go outside and shake it out, and you're done. wear safety glasses. And I do mean that seriously. When I was in my toenail clipper days, I wear eyeglasses, fortunately, but sometimes it wouldn't get quite down flush to the board. And one time I was getting after a little tiny nubby, and I went like that, and it went bang, right in the center of those glasses. If I hadn't had them on, I'd probably still have that piece of lead in there. Place the solder station with the dominant side as the location of the soldering iron, that burning flesh thing. Place the parts on the opposite side. And you do that so you're not reaching across the soldering iron. Put the printed manual at the top of the towel. Along with that printed towel, printed manual at the top of the towel, put a copy of the schematic at the top as well. Have a comfortable chair or seat that you can work at least 2 hours without feeling uncomfortable. This is important. Easy access to multiple AC outlets, because sometimes you're going to be using a voltmeter or something that requires power just over and above what your soldering iron demands. Construction methods. Perf board. Our builders group recently built a dummy load, and it's an oil field, but it's filled with castor oil, so you actually could drink it if you wanted to. But you'd be busy for a while. But this is from that project where we built the dummy load. And it's an article that will be coming out in QST sometime this year. I'm not sure. They haven't gotten back to me about when. But it has a small OLED display, and it reads out the power. And it can take up to 150 watts for a long time. How long did we run that, Al?
Actually, 250. 5 minutes.
Okay, 250 watts for 5 minutes. And it will also measure fractions of watts, so it's good for QRP work too, even though it's overkill. Muppet. This is a way of etching boards that Chuck Adams came up with, and I really, really like it. At the top is that BCI filter that I showed you earlier. And the resistors that you see, that's a 20-watt dummy load. And then over on the other thing is an isolation thing for a keyer. And it's really easy to do. Chuck has a great YouTube series. Just look up Muppet on YouTube and you'll see the series that he has on it. Dead bug style, or sometimes called ugly style. And what you do there is you float the components off a ground plane. And you'll notice a lot of components are grounded, and then you have other components tying into the other end of those. And it works, but it is ugly. The ICs are mounted upside down, so the legs are standing up, and that's how it got the name Dead Bug Style. Manhattan Style. Is Rex here? He owns QRP Me, and they make those little pads that you see there. You glue them in place, and they are for like soldering components too, and then you can solder to the ground plane. So it's a variation of Dead Bug Style, but a lot better looking. This is work done by Dave Richards, AA70E, and it is, if you go to his webpage and look at some of the stuff he's done, it's actually an art form. It's beautiful work. Homebrew commercial CB, or PCBs, again, that's what Mike was talking about, where it's just so easy to do it. We also use DipTrace, and it's a free software for up to 300 components, which is usually more than enough. Make the Gerber files, send it off to the printed circuit board house, and usually very inexpensive. Raises questions. Through-hole or surface-mounted devices? Through-hole. Costs more. By that, I mean it costs more to manufacture the board. Not much, but a little. And the parts are generally more. Discrete resistors and capacitors cost more than the surface-mounted ones. But people find it less frightening. How many people have done SMD? Oh, okay, never mind.
How many have done it successfully?
No, I don't want to know. Okay, less costly, SMD, less costly, and like Mike was saying, you know, you can get 1,000 capacitors in a roll like that long, a strip of paper. However, don't sneeze. Okay. Here's a chart, and he's actually, Hans this morning mentioned the 1206 size. And that's the size that I like. 805s are something that are also doable, but a little harder as you get older. And those top ones, you can barely even see. I like to say you can have a bunch of those, what are they, four somethings on a desk, sneeze, and come back with a transceiver when the cloud settles. This is a thing that I'm going to be doing next month at our club. This is a trial SMD soldering thing. And you get all different sizes of SMDs. You get a couple of ICs, some LEDs, and that's about it. And you mount them on this board. And if you look on the left side, you can see that you have different sizes of components as you work across the board. Then that circle are LEDs that you mount. And if you do it right and apply voltage at the bottom, when you're done, it has an LED thing that spins around. I mean, the real thing that I hope to do is to get some of my club members to have enough courage to try and do some SMD soldering. This is how I store my SMDs. That's a 3-foot piece of board with Velcro on it. And then I've cut little quarter-inch square pieces and put it on what they call a cosmetic sample case and put the SMD parts in that and then just stick it on the wall. And then when I need something, I just go up and pull off what I need. And you can sneeze around that. Certain things you should do at the outset. Continuity check on a bare circuit board. If you can, apply like a 9-volt battery to the plus and do the same for the negative, and then go walking around the board and see if there's any dead shorts that you can find. It's a good idea to do that before you even get started. Use a highlighter pen to mark off the components. Remember I told you to take a copy of the schematic and put it above the towel? And that's why. You take a yellow highlighter, and each time you mark off a component, it will tell you that you've mounted that. If you have an instruction manual like Hans has, you probably don't need to do that. Build the power supply section first and then do the continuity check again. And you should be able to see voltages on certain points on transistors and ICs and stuff like that, as well as ground points. The next session depends on the project. Again, Chuck Adams has a YouTube video on building Diz's one water transceiver, and it's 11 YouTube videos. And he walks through that and shows you how to build the power supply section, then build the audio section and test it, and he shows you how to test it. And it's a very, very instructive video that will give you a reason for building things the way that you do. And his whole thing he's trying to get across there is build in testable sections. And some rules, some hints for success. What I call the 3S2 rule, you put the iron on a joint for 3 seconds, apply the solder, and you hold it for another second or two before you remove the iron. Why is that? Because if you do that, it will wick through to the other side of the board. And you can tell then if you flip the board over and you see solder on that side, it's probably going to be a good connection. The Strum rule. I tend to solder maybe a half a dozen components at a time. And when I'm done, I take my thumbnail and I tweak the lead. And if it makes a musical note, an almost musical note, I'm almost guaranteed it's a good connection. If it goes thud, it's probably cold solder. So after you do that test, then you can take your toenail clippers and clip it off. The Forest rule. Try not to solder more than a half a dozen components at a time, because any more than that, you're probably going to start bumping into things with the iron. And there should be no rush to do that. So just make it easier on yourself. The Cool rule. Some components, like transistors, especially some diodes, like signal diodes, they get a little cranky when you give them too much heat. So what I do is I will mount all of those diodes, and I will go around to all the cathode connections and solder them. Then I will go back and do the anodes. And that way it gives it time to cool in between. I've never had one fail, but I probably never would have anyway, but at least it works. The Clean rule. Clean the soldering tip often. Al discovered that, was it non-lead solder that caused the problem?
Yeah, lead-free.
Lead-free solder will eat a soldering tip in a week?
2 days.
2 days.
It's
yeah, so stay away from lead-free. I don't care what they say about it. Your chance of getting lead poisoning, especially as old as we are, is pretty small. The deep clip rule. This is why the towel, you have the towel. One of the reasons for having the towel, because you take it away and you throw off everything and you're pretty sure that you've got all those little clippings off. I've heard horror stories about people who get done soldering and they don't do that. They apply power and there's just a little hunk of wire that they missed on the bottom side and it shorts out something. And that rarely does anything good for the kit. What kind of enclosure? Well, the key there is what's the purpose of the project. If you're building it to go do a SOTA activation, you don't want something that's big and heavy. Do you need RF protection? Some equipment doesn't. Lightweight, again, if you're taking it portable, size, battery pack, you have to have room for a battery pack, and cost is also another one. Conclusion, why do I build? The reason I build stuff is because I'm trying to learn what I should have been in the first place. Learn something about the hardware. I've learned an awful lot from Al. I learned from reading. I learned from QQ Magazine. Everywhere. Planning, I actually enjoy planning a project. I think that's actually, for me, part of the enjoyment. When I get done, I have a sense of accomplishment, and I even get that, sadly, when something doesn't work. And then when you get it repaired and it does work, there's a feeling that it's hard to describe, but there's a sense of accomplishment that you built something and you're talking to somebody halfway around the world on it. It's just, to me, it's a real high. Okay, any questions? Yeah.
How many times have you left the soldering iron on when you left your room?
None. And the reason is because I built my own office in the basement, and when I flip the light out, everything in the office goes off. Yeah, I should do that, but I don't have to worry about that, fortunately.